You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This episode of the Fight Disciples podcast is brought to you in association with Manscaped. Head to manscaped.com and use the fight code FIGHT20 for your discount on all their products. You too can look like the stud that is Nicholas Pete. It's a one-stop shop for all your fuzz. He does his balls, he does his gooch, he does his beard, and as you can see on recent pictures on social media, he also does his hair. That's right. Pubehead is looking good. Head to manscaped.com. Use the fight code FIGHT20 for all your discounts. I haven't got that wrong, have I, Nick? You definitely cut your hair with your Manscaped shaver.
That was absolutely spot on. I did the lot, back, sack, crack, and head. So, and the wife loved it. That's all I'm going to say. Thank you to Manscaped. You made a little ladies' Valentine's night super special. I was aerodynamic from start to finish.
Let's get on with the show.
This is Fight Disciples.
Welcome to podcast episode 470. We are the Fight Disciples, and this is dedicated to the world of UFC. There will be a lot of Bellator chat in today's show as well, and stuff from around the world. If it's the first time you've ever come across us, please subscribe to us on iTunes. Fight Disciples is what you're looking for. FightDisciples.com is our website. Go and get yourself stuck in. You'll never miss out on any of our content that we're bringing you from the world of boxing and world of MMA. You can also get us on social media at Fight Disciples across all platforms, at The Fight Disciples on Instagram. And we've got a shop as well where we sell beer. So if you're thirsty, get yourself on there. Order yourself a 24-pack. Has anybody won that Stipe Miocic glove, by the way?
The other one, he must have done it, went out. We haven't seen anyone respond.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. We saw one person win one glove.
If you won it, send us a DM and let us know.
Mm.
Make sure someone at the brewery isn't fucking walking around with a Stipe glove on.
That's it. I reckon that's what's happened. Someone's drinking cans of lager wearing a Stipe glove at the old brewery. Anyway, it's all there for you. FightDisciples.com. Go and get yourself stuck in. Valentine's weekend. Lots of love in the air on Sunday. Not a lot of love in the air on Saturday night, Sunday morning, let me tell you, because they didn't half go at it, did they, in the main event of UFC 258. Jeez, stir downs, we're not touching gloves. Let's get to it, baby. Let's get amongst it. I was in the fortunate position of being able to speak to Kamaru Usman and Gilbert Burns throughout the course of the week. Two captivating guys, bags of personality, really like the pair of them. I know that Kamaru gets a bit of a bad rap with fans, people call him snoozeman. I think that's all off the back of Colby Covington's jibes in the past. I find him a really captivating, engaging fella. He has a certain way of dealing with the media, a certain way of handling questions. He's always given me a great interview and I enjoy his time and his company. I think he looks mint. He dresses like an absolute rock star. And at the weekend, he proved that he's the main man. He proved that he could be the number one pound-for-pound fighter on the planet right now, with Khabib obviously stepping away from the game. What an unbelievable performance from Kamaru Usman. And in the build-up to this fight, I said on social media, there is nobody better in the UFC of coming up with a fight-specific game plan and implementing it. Now, whether that be a boring 25-minute stomp-stomp in order to get the job done, or a kickboxing rock'em sock'em robots with a fellow elite level wrestler, Usman has what it takes in order to do the lot. He just takes the least path of resistance in order to get the win. That's his job. Go and get the win. He's not interested in anything else. He's not interested in entertaining, really. He's interested in winning. And at the weekend, he took a fan-friendly way of winning and really, I think, came to the fore as one of the best fighters in the UFC. And I don't think it's an argument now. He's the fucking guy. What a performance.
At 170, he's absolutely the guy. You know, he's absolutely sensational. He's clocked the game. He knows all the cheat codes. You know, this fight, it couldn't have, the first 30 seconds couldn't have started any worse. Gilbert Burns lands a massive overhand. Kamaru ends up on all fours, scrambles back to his feet. That was the perfect start for Gilbert Burns. It got the adrenaline going. But once he got his legs back under him, Kamaru Usman certainly coming into that. At the end of the first round, he starts working that jab. And like once again, the jab is the most underutilized tool in fight sports, period. Whether you're talking boxing or you're talking MMA, the jab is crucial. You fucking work a good jab, everything dictates off that. You just keep offsetting your opponent when it's in the stand-up. The jab wins fights.
Too many use it as a range finder, don't they? They don't use it as a weapon. Use it as a weapon, man.
Of course. Well, he dropped Burns at the start of the third round with it. You know, for me, completely dominates the second round. Kamaru Usman, the writing's on the wall then. Gilbert Burns got no answer. And then suddenly, I'm watching that fight and I'm thinking, in what world did Gilbert Burns believe he could beat Kamaru Usman? Because it was man against boy, it felt like. In the second round,
not in the first round, though. First round, he's in there, man.
Oh, first round, he's in the mix. But once, and this was the, you know, you got to look at the fact that these guys trained together for a long time. He shared a lot of time on the mats. Kamaru Usman and Gilbert Burns, in their heart of hearts, they know. Now, I suggested last week, Gilbert Burns must have a way to beat Kamaru Usman. It's not just momentum. It's not just, oh, my name's on the belt. I've done this. I've done that. I've moved up. My teammate, I've got to do it. The way he was talking, Gilbert Burns, the way he was looking in the build-up all week, what he said to you and everybody else, the confidence that he had, I'm like, okay, shit, this guy knows how to beat Kamaru Usman. That's what makes this so intriguing. But come that second round, I was like, mate, he bossed you on the mats every day. There's a reason why Kamaru Usman was talking about leaving your gym that you're in with him. It's because he's the big shark in your gym. He's too good for you and your training partners. He's already made the conscious decision. I need to go somewhere else to get pushed because I'm the boss in here. And as soon as that fight got into the second round, once Usman was in his groove, you could see it. You could see it and you were like, okay, I get it now. I get why Usman has left this gym. I get why Usman no longer trains with you, because Usman's better than you everywhere. And your strengths, when Gilbert Burns ended up on his back and he was trying to goad Usman to come down to him, I'm like, mate, that's it, isn't it? That's it. When you had jiu-jitsu, when you did jiu-jitsu drills, you were helping Kamaru. When you were training pure jiu-jitsu, you were helping him, working with him. And you believe, if I can take his shots and get him down, make it a jiu-jitsu match, then it's Gilbert Burns' world. Kamaru Usman just refused to engage in a jiu-jitsu match, and because he's so good, his grappling's so good, his power's so good, he's able to do that. And it would just look like it. It looked like, as he said, varsity. I'm not too sure what that means, but it looked like a world champion against his training partner. That's exactly what it was. That's exactly how it played out.
It's like that, though, against everybody in the welterweight division for Kamaru Usman, because he is that good. I personally think you're being a little touch harsh on Gilbert Burns, because Gilbert Burns against the rest of these guys in the welterweight division, he's proved it. I mean, he's smoked Damian Maia. He's smoked Tyron Woodley. I say smoked him. He's absolutely dominated Tyron Woodley. I think he would do that to a lot of the guys in the welterweight division. I just think Kamaru Usman is that good. He's so cold in that cage, man. He thinks so well. To be able to remain so calm and collected when he does face adversity, you know, we very rarely see him face adversity. He's had 13 straight victories now. Nobody's chinned him and put him on his arse, have they? Nobody's really given him a proper whack until Gilbert Burns. First round, Gilbert Burns gives him a fucking big overhand right, rocks him to his core, and he's scrambling around all over the gaff. For him to still remain so cold in those moments and calculated with no emotion, to take all the emotion, and there's a lot of emotion in this fight, let me tell you, to take all that out and just fight the fight. Fight the fight is remarkable what that guy's doing. It's absolutely unbelievable. And like you've said, there's moments there where you're thinking, is he going to engage in this part of the fight? Is he going to engage in this part of the fight? No. He's not interested. He's absolutely doing what he wants to do when he's in there, and you're dancing to his beat. And the instructions that were coming from Trevor Whitman in the corner, just at the end, you started to hear him at the end of that first round when he was in trouble. You most certainly heard it in between the first and the second round when they were in the corner. You are world champion because of your jab. You are world champion because of your jab. And then that drove into Usman. And as I keep saying, there isn't a fighter that I've come across in the UFC that implements game plan better than him. He's like a robot. It's like you've programmed him pre-fight. He goes in there and just carries it out. And that's exactly what he was doing at the weekend, just carrying it out verbatim. Punch after punch, move after move. And like you said, he ended up getting the job done. But I still think Gilbert Burns is elite. He's still the mate. He still beats a lot of these guys in the welterweight division.
Yeah, listen, I'm not saying he doesn't. And I agree with you. Kamaru Usman is a level above all these guys. The point I was trying to make is Gilbert Burns told us all he knew how to win this fight. But when the fight actually started, once we got a couple of minutes in, once Kamaru Usman, you know, shrugged off that temple shot that he took very early in the fight, it was man against boy. And there was no way Gilbert Burns beats him on the mats every day. Kamaru Usman has always been the boss. He was the captain of that ship long before this fight took place. And that became evident to me. As soon as the fight fell into a pattern, Gilbert Burns, you could tell you were Kamaru's sparring partner. You'll never beat Kamaru Usman. The question now is, who in the welterweight division can beat Kamaru Usman? Because you look around them rankings already. Gilbert Burns, done. Colby Covington, done. Leon Edwards, done. Jorge Masvidal, done. Tyron Woodley, done. Damian Maia, done. You know, most of these guys, he's come through now. So we're in an unusual position now with, do we need to see the Leon Edwards second fight? Well, Leon Edwards has gotten better since he lost to Kamaru. But fuck me, so has Kamaru Usman. They'll want to see him fight Michael Chiesa. Okay, different look there. Stephen Thompson. Sorry, I don't think Stephen Thompson's got anything to concern the power and the strength and certainly the grappling ability of Kamaru Usman.
Listen, we know where this is going. We know where this is going because Kamaru is, like you just said, he's cleaned up shop in that division. There's no questions now. There's no question. He's the man. There is no doubt over that whatsoever. Kamaru now is using his business brain. Straight away, he gets on the microphone after the fight, doesn't he? And who does he go after? He goes after the guy that's made him the most amount of money so far. On the top 10 pay-per-view rankings of all time, I think it sits at number 7 right now. It's the Usman-Masvidal fight. That's what he's gone after. Now, does he beat Jorge Masvidal? You would imagine that it would play out very similar to how the fight on Fight Island played out the first time round. And you know how much I love Jorge Masvidal. But now, Kamaru's in a real, I don't say a tricky position. He's in a great position because he's the guy and he calls all the shots. What does he do? Does he stay in this weight division and try and make the most amount of money that he can possibly make and become the greatest welterweight of all time? Many would argue that he's already doing that right now. Or does he go and challenge himself? Does he go, do you know something? Fuck it, man. Let's go and have a play at middleweight. Let's go and have a look at some of these other guys. What does he do?
Bingo.
He's in a real precarious position, I think, of what he does next.
For me, yes, he's clean shop at welterweight now. I don't think there's anybody in the welterweight division for me that pushes Kamaru Usman. I've got two options here.
Go on.
You just said then at the start of that, you said, Kamaru Usman, there's no disputing now that pound for pound, probably the best fighter in the UFC. The reason we're allowed to give him that mantle is because the best pound for pound fighter in the UFC is in quasi-retirement.
Here we go.
However, he's cleaned up at lightweight. So why is Kamaru Usman not saying, listen, man, I believe I'm the best pound-for-pound fighter in the sport. The guy, the lightweight champion, you all said was the best pound-for-pound fighter in the sport. Why doesn't he come up to welter and let's have a dance? Let's have a party. Me versus Khabib. Let's see who's the best grappler striker in the sport. He said he would have moved up to fight GSP anyway. I'm here, boy. I'm here. I've cleaned up. People are saying I'm better than GSP. Come up to welterweight, Mr. Khabib. Let's dance. Let's make some money and let's make a super fight. That's option number one.
It's a good shout.
Option number two for the microphone for Kamaru Usman was, boom, the middleweight champion's gone. He's gone up to light heavyweight now. So for me, that means there's at very least a middleweight interim title belt in the offering for me as the welterweight champion. Bring me Robert Whittaker. Let me go to middleweight. He's a former welterweight himself. I'll go to middleweight now. I want to fight Robert Whittaker for at the very least the interim middleweight belt. That starts a conversation. That starts a conversation with the media. With listen, he says, these are them things. I'm like, let's go, Kamaru Usman. Oh, shit, you're here to play. Kamaru Usman rocking the mic and going, tell you what then, I will give you full 12-week camp, Jorge Masvidal. Why? I don't need you to. I don't need to see Kamaru Usman
money.
Beat Jorge Masvidal
money.
Again.
It's about dollars, man.
Yeah, but he makes more money fighting Habib, and he adds more to his legacy by fighting Habib or moving to middleweight.
The Habib one, yeah, you're right, 100% with the Habib one.
More money, more prestige, bigger legacy. I don't think Kamaru Usman or Team Usman. I need to know where they're going with this because they're going to fall into the GSP place of just. And John Jones for so long, staying at welterweight, regurgitating the same opponents. Nah, man, you're here for a short period of time. I want to know, how good is Kamaru Usman? He's the best welterweight on the planet. Is he the best fighter in MMA today? Is he the greatest? Shit, okay. Let me see something special. Him versus Habib at welterweight is a huge fight, and it throws a whole new dynamic, and it finally gives Dana... and his broken heart and his non-Valentine card off Habib, it gives Dana the opportunity to sit down with Habib and go, let me put my arm around you. How about a move to welter? Kamaru is going to, you know, we'll even put a rehydration, whatever it may, whatever we've got to do to make it happen. I think that's going to make Habib go, okay. That sounds interesting. That sounds interesting to me. Or Kamaru going to middleweight, I think that was the direction Kamaru should have done. I've cleaned shop now. I'm the guy. I don't want to regurgitate anyone. Because listen, if he gives Jorge Masvidal a 12-week camp and he stands and bangs with Jorge Masvidal, and let's say Masvidal lands and suddenly Kamaru's in trouble, guess what Kamaru does? He reverts to type. And he does exactly what he did in the first fight, in the second fight if he's in trouble. Because he knows he can drive... Masvidal up against the fence, hold him there, foot stomp him, trip him, take him down. He can beat Masvidal that way every day of the week. So what's the point of redoing that fight? He's got to now go, okay, now I want to show the world how great I am. Bring me the best pound-pound fight in the world, Mr. Habib. Come on, put your money where your mouth is, because at the very least, then someone's got to sit with Habib and go, holy shit. Do you want to go and fight Kamaru Usman? Because he actually might be better than GSP anyway, and he's fresh. Or did you just want to fight GSP because he was an old man? Now that's a different conversation with Habib, a different opportunity, a massive opportunity for a super fight featuring both these guys.
You got me in, man.
You've got me in.
I'm in on the Habib fight. There's no doubt about it. I just think from listening to post-fight interviews, listening to Dana, listening to all little bits and bats, and we're hearing, obviously, that Leon... and Colby is a fight that the UFC are working on, which leaves Masvidal Usman for tough. That's maybe where that's going to go, man.
I just don't listen. I'm a huge Kamaru Usman fan. He looks the part. He fights the part. You know, forget about Masvidal now. Look at the Colby Covington performance. Brilliant. Gilbert Burns performance. Fucking brilliant. He's the guy. Let's sell them on a global scale. Let's do the whole, you know, let's get them out to Africa as soon as possible. I'm in. But he was on Tough before.
Yeah.
He was on Tough ATT versus Black Zillions. And there was characters on there and there was people that made it entertaining viewing. Kamaru Usman was not one of those guys. Kamaru Usman is a model pro. Look at him. Look at the shape he's in. Look how good his fight IQ is. He's not an entertaining personality. This is not like throwing fucking Masvidal and Colby Covington into the Tough House, unmissable TV, because they're both absolutely mad as a box of frogs and you don't know what's going to happen next. Kamaru Usman will be in bed by 7 o'clock every night, will be the first person on the mats, will be trying to chain the lads and talk sense and everything else. I don't want to see that in Tough. That's why Tough died. Tough will only live on and will only come back with characters. Kamaru Usman's not a character. He's a wonderful champion and probably one of the best fighters on the planet right now. In fact, undoubtedly one of the best fighters on the planet right now. He is not a tough coach.
Look at you. You started, haven't you? You started making more fights. It's only taking
Khabib versus Kamaru. Let's make it happen,
Let's
baby.
Go.
Let's find out who is the best pound for pound fighter in the sport today.
King of grappling.
Khabib versus Kamaru at 170. Greatness, baby. Let's go after it.
King of grappling. That's what we want to see, don't we? Is it Russia? Is it America?
Oh, let's do it on Christmas Day. Let's do it on Christmas Day, man.
I hope Dana's listened to this because it'll give Dana something nice to talk to Khabib about.
We just briefly touched upon it there. We wish Khamzat Chimaev all the best with his recovery. It's not sounding too good at all, this. You know that the fight with Leon Edwards has been booked 3 times. It's fallen off 3 times now. The final one is that there is lingering side effects of COVID-19, which Khamzat Chimaev contracted over Christmas. We're told that after a training session or something last week or the week before, he ended up in hospital, struggling to breathe and various things. Not only do we wish him well in his recovery, we hope that at some point that he can resume his career, because it's not sounding good right now. That all said and done, obviously Leon Edwards can't sit and wait around forever. It's his career as well. He's got to get moving and get cracking. And it was good to hear Dana White come out straight away that they are trying their best to work on the Colby Covington fight. Even though Leon's been going back and forth on social media, he's been having a bit with everybody, it seems. I think the winner of the social media exchanges was most certainly Nate Diaz, as he posted the Jeremy Stevens picture with Leon's head on it, saying, "Who the fuck is this guy?" It was brutal. It was absolutely savagery at the very, very highest level. Listen, Nate Diaz ain't fighting Leon Edwards. Nate Diaz wants to fight at welterweight, but he only wants to fight lightweights at welterweight. He is not fighting Leon Edwards. It does nothing for him whatsoever. There's no dough in it for him. It's lose-lose for Nate Diaz. But Leon Edwards, Colby Covington, is a fight that I most certainly want to see. They've been at it on social for a long period of time. It's a wonderful fight. And the winner of that, you would think, is getting a world title shot off the back of it.
Yes, absolutely. It's got to be a final eliminator. There's no other way you can dress that up. I'm kind of gutted. I wanted to see Colby versus Masvidal in the Tough House. I think that was a sensational idea. And I think that does diminish whatever guys that version of Tough comes back as. But I think for Leon Edwards, it's got to be one of those guys. If you're not going to give Leon the next shot at Kamaru, then it's got to be Colby in a final eliminator. It's got to be. Mm. Only fair way to do it.
Leon was adamant that he wanted to stay on the March 13th date. It's not looking that good, though, now. I don't think Colby's going to be taking that fight on 4 weeks' notice, unless he's been in decent nick over Christmas, which I doubt.
True. Yeah. He's still trying to reinvent himself, hasn't he, with a new persona? Because now the Trumps have gone. He's fucked.
Mm.
That's going to take some time.
Yeah. I sent you my betting slip, didn't I, from the weekend. I had a decent one by Kamaru Usman, because I backed Kamaru Usman to win over the distance. And he ended up knocking Gilbert Burns out, stopping him in the third round. That was the only one that didn't come in. I picked methods of victory and what have you. But one fight that I wouldn't have picked in a month of Sundays is Anthony Hernandez beating Rodolfo Vieira via submission. Shit the bed. 30-1. 30-1 to the submission. 7-time Abu Dhabi jiu-jitsu champion. I've lost count how many fucking dans he's got on his black belt. He's unbelievable, is Rodolfo Vieira, isn't he? But Jesus Christ, the tank just went after 3 minutes. Just went. Zroom.
Yep.
Through the kitchen sink and then lost.
He did. He absolutely got lost. And not only lost, he got fucking embarrassed because he got absolutely choked out by Anthony Hernandez. And the best thing about it, in the post-fight interview when Rogan was speaking to Hernandez, he was like, "Can you believe you've just subbed out a 7-time Abu Dhabi gold medalist or whatever?" And Hernandez was like, "That don't mean shit to me. This is MMA." I was like, "Yeah, baby. Yeah." Rodolfo Vieira, listen, his reputation as a jiu-jitsu player fucking obviously speaks for itself. His statistics speak for themselves. And unbeaten in MMA with all submissions. Obviously, he's a guy that nobody wants to face in this middleweight division. So all credit in the world to Anthony Hernandez, who fucking just went for it. Thing with Vieira is he was dangerous for 2.5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
And after 2.5 minutes, them big jiu-jitsu muscles, that jiu-jitsu frame that he's got, that power jiu-jitsu physique that he's got, completely and utterly went against him. Because that is not functional muscle for mixed martial arts. You know what I mean?
You sound like DC. Muscles, man. DC was saying you need a little bit of fat around there to get the air around to them muscles, man. The beach muscles.
Beach muscles. Typical Brazilian jiu-jitsu player stacked with beach muscle, and that's it. And I'd like to know if Vieira does any road work. Does he hit the Aerodyne bike? Does he actually do 6 miles in the morning? All that money in the tank, that's critical for fight sports, boxing, MMA. If you're not doing your road work, if it's not in the tank, then you're going to get found out. And Vieira clearly doesn't do road work. He clearly doesn't do enough interval training or whatever it may be, because he had no gas in his tank whatsoever. He looked fit. Yeah. He looked in incredible shape. But those muscles were for the beach, baby. They are no good inside the octagon. That might work in jiu-jitsu when you're just rolling around in your gi, going from one submission attempt to the next. But when you've got to stand up and get put down and pick yourself up again and take shots and reel off punches, and then you're on your back and then you're back up to your feet, then muscles will defy you. And that's exactly what happened. 3 minutes in, nothing left in the tank. Hernandez just lighting him up left, right, and centre. And that was the best thing, man. Hernandez could have knocked him out, but he didn't.
Yeah.
He dropped him, jumped on him, and went looking. First of all for the anaconda, and then it ended up becoming a guillotine choke. Mate, that was literally like sleeping with his girl and then wiping his dirty cock on the curtains on his way out.
Mate,
brilliant.
He was thirsty for a submission. Like you say, he was lighting him up. He's landing on the whiskers. He's knocking him out in a minute. He stopped hitting him purposely to try and get hold of his neck because he was absolutely thirsty to sub him. And he must have had about 10 different attempts at chokes. I'm thinking, just knock him out. No, I'm not knocking him out. He's gone. He's out on his feet. Just kick him in the head. He's gone. No, not doing it. I am going to sub this dude. And then when he ended up getting it, I was thinking, is he going to pack it in? Is it? Yeah, he's going to give it up in a minute. He's going to give it up. And then when the tap came, I just started pissing myself with laughter going, that is madness. Absolute madness. 30-1 for Anthony Hernandez to submit him. Well done, mate. Well done. And
What is he, a purple belt? Brilliant.
That was the best bit of the interview as well, wasn't it? He goes, I want some more stripes on my purple belt. How about you just have a brown belt, mate? I think you've gone past the stripes. You just fucking ripped this kid's head off. Brilliant.
Fucking brilliant.
Really good. Really good indeed. Other highlights, I would say, Pollyanna Viana, maybe, as a highlight performance-wise. I thought she was very, very good. And Grasso was good for 10 minutes. I thought Macy Barber came back into it in the third round. But I thought Grasso on the feet looked really, really good in the co-main event.
Yeah, it just shows you what momentum brings. You know, obviously she's moved up to flyweight, but she's had a couple of good wins at flyweight. She was in the ascendancy coming in. But Macy Barber, we all believe the hype, man. And interesting to see Macy Barber's no longer with Duke Rufus, though. She's left Duke Rufus, who we'd spoken to prior to her last fight, albeit a defeat. And Duke was saying amazing things about her. But obviously Macy Barber's thought, you know what? That loss was down to XYZ related to Rufus Sport. So I'm going to move to a new camp with a new team and reinvent myself. And unfortunately, she's left it too late again. And she's ended up suffering another painful defeat. The dreams of becoming the youngest ever female UFC champion are now well and truly gone for Macy Barber. And it's going to be really interesting to see how her career progresses from here, because that co-main event spot wasn't set up for Alexa Grasso to get a coming out party. It was set up for Macy Barber to bounce back. All credit in the world to Alexa Grasso, of course. She deserved it. But interesting to see where Macy Barber goes from here. Big win for Kelvin Gastelum, though, as well, man. The pressure was on my mate Kelvin. Massive pressure against Ian Heinisch, who must have thought like he'd won the lottery getting this fight. What an amazing opportunity to break into the top 10. But Gastelum just getting his business done. I like that.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Lots of news going on in the world of MMA. Lots of news going on, and we're going to get stuck into that in a moment. We'll start, I think, with your lightweight tournament, because you will have seen the president, Dana White, coming out saying that we are working on Connor Dustin 3 for the summer. There you go. Connor Dustin 3 for the summer. It's gone, isn't it? Your tournament's gone, mate. How are you feeling?
No, it hasn't gone at all, actually. Quite the opposite. Quite the opposite, because Dana himself came out and said, what we've got here is we've got a tournament, and he listed 6 or 7 fighters. The problem is the tournament has begun, Dana.
Yeah.
We're at the semi-final stage now, son. You can't go back to the quarterfinals because Conor got beat. You can't just go, right, reset. Let's start again, shall we? No. We're at the semi-final stage now, Dana. You've got 4 standout guys that should be fighting next. 2 for the title, 1 in a final eliminator, and we bring Conor back through the back door. But Dana seems adamant that he wants to do Conor Dustin 3, which will be a non-title fight as well, which is good. You know, I'm not against it being a non-title fight. I just feel for Dustin, because Dustin now deserves to have an opportunity to get
the belt wrapped around
his waist.
This is Dustin's choice. Dustin's obviously, he knows what's on the line. He knows that he could fight for a title. Nobody is saying that he can't fight for a title. He is obviously taking the choice of, whilst I'm hot and whilst I can, I'm going to go and beat Conor McGregor again. That's where he's at, because he knows that there's an awful lot of money on the table. You might as well take that opportunity now. Why go and let Conor, you know, go and have some other fights, gain that confidence, get that sharpness back up to where it was, and then come back at it in a year from now. So I've nothing against Dustin Poirier going and taking that fight right now. He's made a choice, though. He's made a choice of what he wants to do, and the UFC are obviously dancing to that beat. It's going to be interesting to see what they do then with Oliveira and a few others, Gaethje, Chandler, how all this now starts to play out and all the pieces of the puzzle get put together. Because as I keep saying, it's a fascinating division, man. So many wonderful, wonderful fights to be made, and I'm sure that they will be being made over the forthcoming months. Another great fight that has been rescheduled is Jiří Prochazka against Dom Reyes. It's been it was off, now it's back on for May the 1st, which we're looking forward to. If Prochazka wins that, he could be in line for a title fight, mate. They could be lining him up for Izzy, if Izzy beats Jan. If Jan comes through, Jan against Prochazka, fucking hell. What a fight, man. What a fight. What a division. Now, let's talk Bellator, shall we? First and foremost, let's talk broadcasting, because we're always moaning about this. This is our first thing that we moan about whenever we talk about Bellator. How do I watch it? How do I consume it? Is it on Channel 5? Is it on Sky Sports? Do I have to get a hooky stream? Where can I watch the Bellator events? And what I will say is that over the last 2 to 3 years with Bellator, obviously, I'll speak for myself. I've given it a bashing, and I've been derogatory towards Bellator as a brand, and to a standard of MMA. And that is most certainly down to me being able to consume this to the level that I consume the UFC. I'm across the UFC. I'm in the UFC. In fact, I'm more across Cage Warriors than I am Bellator, because I don't know how to watch Bellator. It's so hard to get hold of the fights. You're making it too hard for me to be asked about it. So maybe over the last 2 years, I've taken my eye off the ball of some of the talent that's coming through there. I've not paid too much attention to it. I've dipped in and out of the big stuff, and I'm not across it as much as I would be with the UFC. This now gives us an opportunity to be right across Bellator to the levels that we're across with other MMA organisations. It's great that the BBC are involved, that throughout the course of 2021, you are going to get to see every single Bellator event on the iPlayer. Tick, tick, tick. Thank you very much. A one-stop shop. This is good for MMA. It's good for MMA in Britain. However, BBC, and I'm pleading to you, because I know that there's people from the BBC that listen to this podcast. Mm-hmm. Please invest in programming. This is not a job application. I am interested. If you want us to come and do it, we'll do it. But you have talent there. You've got presenters there. You've got fighters that you can use. Don't just take an international stream and stick it up on the iPlayer and then hope that that works just because it's cost effective. Yes, fight fans, hardcore fight fans, are going to come to watch it, and they're going to be able to see the fights. That's all well and good. You've now got an opportunity to grow the sport, to appeal to the sports fan, to the casual fan. And you do that with pre-programming, post-programming, and fight night programming. build a studio. If it's around Gareth and Liam McCourt, build a studio around them. Give them the opportunity to show their knowledge on the sport. Gareth's a wonderful historian of MMA. He knows the ins and outs of everything that's going on Bellator, and he can sell the iron legs off a donkey. So allow him to do that. Allow him to put that education out there to the casual audience where they learn something about what they're watching, rather than just see the feed and then listen to Goldie commentate on it and then not fully understand what they're getting to see. Put some proper programming together, showcase some fighters, and have review shows where you're picking the bones out of X, Y, and Z, where people can learn some stuff. Because what that then does is that it gains interest from a casual audience to come to MMA. They're watching Bellator, they're thinking, fucking hell, this is good. What else is there out there for me to go and see? Oh, I've not watched much UFC. I'll go and watch UFC. Where's the UFC? Fair enough, that benefits me and Nick. Of course it does. It's on BT Sports. So you come there and you watch that. Where's Cage Warriors at? Fight Pat? That's how you build fans, with proper programming. Please, BBC, you've done well. You've got the rights. Invest. That's all I'm asking you to do.
Yeah, I fear, unfortunately, you're whistling into the wind a little bit. But you know, I've got a feeling it's literally just they're just going to take the international feed. And unfortunately, I say the international feed with Mike Goldberg, and you know, there's a reason why those people were binned out of the UFC, because it sounds like the UFC 15 years ago. You know, the commentary is so poor on Bellator and the matchmakings. Listen, it is what it is. I want to celebrate the fact that Bellator have got a great regular outlet here in the UK that we can now just go to. There's no more question of where is it? How can I watch it? Is it Sky? Is it Channel 4? Is it here? Is it there? Is it everywhere? No, everything is on the iPlayer. I just fear that they will just be taking international feed content, which is disappointing. The UFC do have the BBC do have a MMA tab on their BBC Sport website, which is great. Obviously, I still do some stuff with BBC 5 Live, completely separate entity. They're continuing with their UFC pay-per-view event commentary on 5 Live, even though they didn't do the event last weekend. This is the problem. It's dipping in and dipping out. The beauty of this is they're committed to putting every event on over 2021. So if you're a Bellator fighter from the UK and Ireland, it must be great for you, because obviously you can sell advertising on your shorts that is going to massively benefit, because you can say it's on BBC iPlayer.
Yeah.
And hopefully that means the spin-off of that is that there's more coverage across other BBC outlets about Bellator and everything else, which is great. As you say, grows the sport. Unfortunately, having been aware of and covered Bellator for many years, it's just another typical Bellator move, you know, because we've just mentioned three or four different outlets there that have had Bellator fights on over the last couple of years. But this is nothing new. This is what Bellator have always done. It's always been a complete mess, and we're not alone. You know, they started in the US on MTV2, which later became Spike, which later became Paramount Network in the US. Then they signed a five-year deal with DAZN. DAZN were going to do all Bellator for 5 years. That deal lasted a year. Then they went with CBS. They signed a long-term deal with CBS. That deal lasted a year. Now in the US, they're being shown on Showtime. They just announced that. Whoa, Showtime. We're going to Showtime. The problem is Bellator is owned by Viacom, unlike the UFC, which is privately owned. They're owned by Viacom, and Viacom are a multi-global.
They own Channel 5.
You know, they fucking own everything. They're a multimedia, multi-channel fucking massive business. And they own all these they own CBS, they own Showtime, they own MTV, all these bits and bobs. And that's the problem. You see, they've never been able to find a home, because Viacom just bounces around various channels willy-nilly. And the same thing has kind of happened over in the UK. Viacom don't own the BBC. So you've got to see this as a step forward that it goes on to iPlayer. But while I completely agree with you that they should invest in some programming to support it all, do not get your hopes up. Not get your hopes up.
But what this does do is that it allows, and again, I can only speak from me personally, it allows me to be able to see more Bellator, to judge more Bellator, and give you more of an informed take on Bellator.
Yeah.
You know, and that can only be a good thing. you know, because I think when I look at that light heavyweight tournament, I look at it and listen, of course it's mouthwatering, it's good, right? And I've had conversations with people on social media this week about levels of MMA, whether the UFC is the elite or whether Bellator is the B league or whatever it may be. And I've got my opinions right now. And as a human being, if you're not growing and you're not learning, then you're not doing something right. And this is why I'm having this conversation now, because I'm willing to obviously hope, well, gain more education to give you a bit more of an informed look of where Bellator is at. Right now, I strongly believe that Bellator as a whole is a step down from the UFC. I look at that light heavyweight tournament. I'm excited by it. I think it's a great tournament. But all I can see is guys that didn't make it in the UFC now competing in Bellator's light heavyweight tournament. And when I say didn't make it, I'm talking about the top, top level, becoming champion at the very highest level. And I'm talking about recently. Don't give me arguments from, well, he was UFC champion 10 years ago. That's 10 years ago. The UFC has changed dramatically now. MMA's changed dramatically. We're not talking about one disciplined fighters coming into the game. We're talking about multifaceted fighters being able to do all aspects of this sport. Mixed martial arts. Not just kickboxers, not just jiu-jitsu players. The fucking works, right? So now I look at this tournament and I'm excited by it. I think to myself, yeah, there's some good names there, some good retro names, some lads that we know who they are, but there's also a lad coming through there that might, and I'm not saying this categorically, he might be the best light heavyweight on the planet, in Nemkov. I'm a big fan of him. I think he's an absolute fucking beast, the kid. And I think that this tournament is set up for him to go on to become the guy, the superstar guy. Now, other people might look at it and go, we talk about Yoel Romero and Rumble Johnson and Ryan Bader and all these guys. We know those guys. Yeah, you know those guys because they were in the UFC. But there's a reason why they've put Yoel Romero and Rumble Johnson together in the first round. Because if they run into Nemkov, they're getting smoked, right? They've put that fight together because it's a big money fight. There's no point in dilly-dallying and wasting the opportunity just in case one of those guys gets beat along the way. Do the fight. It's a great work. I think it's brilliant from Bellator putting it in that first round. One of them's going to come through. They are then, I mean, Nemkov's got a top fight in Phil Davis. Phil Davis is a good fighter. I think Nemkov comes through. Nemkov versus Yoel Romero does massive, massive, massive numbers for Bellator. And it also does massive things for Nemkov's star. It makes him rise. It's a clever tournament, the way that this has been set out by Bellator in order to have that big Russian as their main guy at the end of it all.
Yeah, listen, Rumble versus Romero, sign me the fuck up. I want to see that. That's going to be juicy and brilliant from start to finish. I love it. But you're right. Listen, I think it's the fact that it's populated. The tournament is populated. The six of the eight are guys who never made it in the UFC. Machida obviously did make it, but a very long time ago. Machida, Bader, Corey Anderson, Rumble, Romero, and Phil Davis are all guys that were willingly dropped by the UFC. So for that reason, Bellator is always going to be judged as being the Europa League. But that doesn't mean that the likes of Vadim Nemkov, fucking Fedor's protege, isn't destined one day to be the fucking best fighter in the world.
Yeah.
You know, you see some of the best teams compete in the Europa League, and next season you see them in the Champions League and they're fucking brilliant. So, but then again, he's fighting Phil Davis, and the first Phil Davis fight was a split decision. It was a close decision. So it's an intriguing fight. It's an intriguing tournament. I'm super looking forward to it. And the one thing they're doing that I do want to praise here is Bellator fucked up last time. They did a middleweight tournament or whatever it was, welterweight tournament or whatever it was they did.
Welters. I think it was welters, yeah.
Welters with Rory McDonald and that, yeah. And it took about 3 years to play out.
Yeah.
It took forever because each quarterfinal had its own date, like 6 weeks apart, and they fucked it up. What they're doing this time is April 16th, April 9th, they're the two legs of quarterfinals. Two fights on one, two fights the week after. Great. Then we head into the summer, no doubt with the two semifinals, hopefully on the same bill. That makes perfect sense. And then you do the final at the back end of the year to crown a new champion. Nemkov, of course, is the current champion, taking the belt into the tournament. So I love it. I love the way the draw's been set up. Bring it on, man. I haven't been excited about Bellator like this in a long time.
No, absolutely. Gets underway on April 2nd, Pitbull. in action in a world title fight, innit?
On the BB, you mean? On iPlayer?
On the iPlayer, yeah. And I think the tournament is a little bit later that month, innit? Is it 16th after, or something,
like, the
something
like that? April the 9th.
There you go. Yeah. Something like that. Now then, this kind of moves on nicely to the UFC this weekend, because for the next 20 minutes, I've no doubt that Nick Pete is just going to wax lyrical about a big heavyweight from the northwest of England, because my word, has he got an opportunity to become a star this weekend. Bit surprised. I mean, I haven't seen the finalized bout sheet, but I'm seeing him at top of the prelims. I'm not seeing him on the main card, which is obviously a good thing, I suppose. Even, I know it's not a pay-per-view. It doesn't really make that much of a difference. But to be the top of the prelims guy kind of is a showcase fight. And when you're taking on the former heavyweight champion in Orlovsky, Tom Aspinall has an opportunity to announce himself to the American audience on Saturday night.
He sure does, man. And listen, we've been on that train since day one, haven't we? I've been telling everyone I've seen this kid do stuff in the gym that no heavyweight I've seen in mixed martial arts do before. He's got the kind of footwork and the hand speed that is more befitting a middleweight. You know, it's mental what Tom Aspinall has the ability to do. Now we get to that, or super important, probably more critical than anything, stage of, are you a gym fighter or are you legitimately able to carry the weight of fighting a former UFC champion into the octagon on a massive stage? You know, I think it is main card. Originally, I heard it was going to be co-main event, but I'm seeing it's been dropped down a card. It's definitely main card. That's what Tom had told me. I was hoping it was going to be co-main, but regardless, you know, we talk about Tom Aspinall here in his, I think this is his 10th fight, taking on Andre Orlov.
Is it third in the UFC?
Third in the UFC, but his 10th career fight.
Yeah.
Taking on Andre Orlovsky, who last time I looked, this is his 52nd career fight. The difference in experience is absolutely bonkers. And what we've seen from, listen, Andre Orlovsky, he's not the form, you know, he's far from being the UFC champion he once was. However, when you look down his recent record, they fed him to the likes of Philip Lins, Tanner Bosser, who everyone got briefly excited about. You try and feed these people an opponent like Andre Orlovsky at the right time so they can build their name off Orlovsky, and they get caught up, because Orlovsky is still fucking Andre Orlovsky. He's still, okay, he's a lot longer than the tooth now, but he's still a 52-fight veteran, former UFC champion who fucking knows his way around the octagon. The thing with Orlovsky is you've got to chin him, you've got to hit him, you've got to stop him. That's how you beat him. That's how you beat him. He has a way to win on points. You've got to hit him early on, and you've got to dominate the fight. And that's what Tom Aspinall's got to overcome this weekend. He's not facing Andre Orlovsky. He's facing a veteran. He's facing a man who's 42 years of age that can't live with his pace, that can't take his kind of power, and he needs to get in there and stamp his authority on the fight. Don't circle him like Tanner Bosser did last time out and let yourself get beat. Do what Jairzinho Rosenstruck done. Do what, you know, Taito Avassa done. Take the fight to him. Get in there and fucking let this guy know that you're the new kid on the block. And that's what he's got to do. That's what Tom has got to approach the fight this weekend. It's a super opportunity for him. I truly believe he's going to get a sensational finish.
Here he is.
And then hold on to your hats, ladies and gentlemen.
Here he is.
Legit heavyweight title contender.
People listening to this right now, I don't know if you pick up on this. Whenever we're reviewing fights, previewing fights, or whatever it may be, there's a normal level in the decibels, right? When you're talking and everything's balanced and you're giving analytics, everything's normal until Nick talks about a fighter that he's picked to be the next big thing, right? He gets quicker and quicker and quicker, and he gets higher and higher and higher. Whenever he's talking about Tom, Darren, whoever it may be, you could just see the speed picking up in you chatting then throughout the course of that. He goes, this is what he needs to do. He needs to go through this. He needs to do this. It's like you're giving some type of pre-fight speech going, you better fucking win, mate. You better win, because I'm coming back next week and I'm rubbing it in all these motherfuckers' faces. I'm letting them know that I was the guy that picked you. Listen, you're right. You picked him. And from the moment that you picked him, all eyes have been on him and he's not let us down. He has been absolutely brilliant. He's a fascinating watch, is Tom. And I just, from being around him and the demeanour of the kid, I don't think he gives a fuck who he's fighting. I don't care. I don't think he cares. I don't think he doesn't come the type of guy that would get starstruck or get dazzled by the brighter lights, the higher up the level we go. He just doesn't seem to give a shit. You know what I mean? He's just fighting a body. And I think if he takes that approach into this fight at the weekend, we could have a breakout moment, mate, and I'm excited for it.
Yeah, man, there's a reason why all his wins are first-round knockouts, and that's not because Tom Aspinall's the biggest puncher the sport's ever seen. Far from it. What it is he's faster than any heavyweight I've ever seen in MMA. He's faster than any heavyweight I've ever seen in mixed martial arts, and that, for me, is what blinds people. He throws the kind of punches and combinations that people just don't see coming, and you don't really see that in MMA. And you know what? The best thing about it is, he's also a BJJ black belt on the ground. Him and his dad run their own BJJ school. So don't worry about it if the fight hits the ground either. It's a fascinating fight, man. Just wait and see Andrei Arlovsky's face when Tom cracks one on his chin, because he won't see it coming.
Listen, from the highs to the lows, because we're all gutted for Jai Herbert. I was really looking forward to this man this week against Draco Closer. It's been a baptism of fire for Jai, hasn't it, in the UFC? Yeah. They're not fucked about with him. They've just gone, all right, you think you're the big balls, do you, in Cage Warriors? Okay, lad, come and fight some of our killers. Boom, and he just keeps getting thrown in with all these absolute monsters. Draco Closer, I just think as a matchup, was perfect for Jai. I thought it just looks so good for him to go and be brilliant. And obviously, he tested positive for COVID, so therefore he's off. Fair play to Luis Pena, because he stepped in last minute. He's taking on Draco Close, and now that's the replacement fight. But from Jai's point of view, we wish him all the best with his recovery, and fingers crossed. We've seen what's happened to Hamza, haven't we? And how much he's struggling trying to get himself back to fighting fitness. We hope it's not too bad for Jai, and he's back out very, very soon. Supreme talent, and I'm looking forward to seeing him fight.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I'm gutted for him. Absolutely gutted. At first I thought it might have been something to do with the travel or whatever, but he's genuinely ill, isn't he? So it's heartbreaking for him. I just hope it gets rearranged quickly.
What do you think of the big boys in the main event this weekend? It's a weird one, isn't it? Because obviously in the heavyweight division, all eyes are on Stipe versus Ngannou. That's what we're all excited about. And we know what's happening after that. We know that it's Jonny Bones. So what happens to the rest of them? What do these fights mean? Where is it putting them in the pecking order?
Yeah, well, what do you need to do? Someone needs to look sensational. Someone's got to do something sensational to lay a claim to either jump in with John Jones or jump in ahead of John Jones. Anything can happen in this sport, and that's the beauty of it. You know, John Jones could pick up an injury, whatever. You know, John Jones could be torpedoed into that fight if something happens to Francis or to Stipe. You know, the likes of Curtis Blaydes and Derek Lewis need to know that. These are the next guys. You know, you've got those three. And then for me, the winner of this fight is the next guy right below it. If it wasn't for John Jones, whoever wins this weekend would be able to lay a claim for the next title shot. So it's critical that they get the win this weekend, either of them, to stay in that frame, to stay in that mix, to talk some trash about John Jones jumping McHugh, all that kind of stuff. And you know, for me, I think Curtis Blaydes wins this and wins it easy. Just because we know there's a gaping hole in Derek Lewis's game, and if that gaping hole just happens to be Curtis Blaydes' strength, so I think Curtis Blaydes shoots on him early, takes him down, and tires him out, and probably gets a finish in the, you know, pretty early in the fight for me. But hopefully Derek lands something a bit special, and hopefully we get something a little bit mental in there, but I can only see one winner in this fight, and that's Curtis Blaydes.
Anything else on that card that's appealing to you? Because as I'm looking down it, and like I said, I haven't got the official final bout sheet order, but as I'm looking down it, the prelims look better than the main card.
Yeah, some of the prelims are sick.
Yeah, they are.
Don't get me wrong, I think Ketlin Vieira against Kunitskaya, the bantamweight fight, which according to my thing at the moment is co-main events, but I wouldn't be surprised if that got dropped further down. That's a good fight. That's a really interesting fight. Both those girls are very much at the top of this bantamweight rankings. Both ranked in the top 10 comfortably.
Ned Lanway is fighting, isn't he, this weekend? And he's always a fucking lunatic. Yeah, he's on the prelims, is Ned Lanway. He always brings a good fight. But like I say, as I look at them prelims, I actually think that the prelims are more attractive than the main card. No disrespect to the guys in the main card. I just fancy the prelims a little bit more.
Yeah, Eddie Wineland's always in fun fights. Dracar Closer versus Lewis Pena's a non-miss fight. That's got fight of the night written all over it because the two of them are mental. And then there's the Scottish girls on here, isn't she? Casey O'Neill against Shana Dobson. It's going to be interesting to see Casey O'Neill. I think she's only 5 fights into her pro career, but tons of ability. Made a big name for herself over in the Middle East. This is her UFC debut. I think she's Scotland born and raised, but I'm pretty sure she's based out of Tiger Muay Thai. Tiger Muay Thai in Australia. She's Australian-based, Scottish-born or something like that. But anyway, it's going to be interesting to see her make her UFC debut. But either way, we're claiming her. Brits are claiming her. I think she's the number one Australian fighter, but she's a Scot. Let's leave it there, shall we?
Should be a good one. Make sure you come and join us. I'll say come and join us on social media. Come and join us for those fights in the early hours. What are you rubbing your belly for? What are you rubbing your belly for there?
Starving.
All right, is it lunchtime for you now, is it?
Lunchtime now. That's it. I'm out.
You've done your work for the day now. Go and have a feed. those fights going down in the early hours of Sunday morning should be a cracker, and keep an eye out for Tom Aspinall. That's the fight that we're all interested in. Arlovski versus Aspinall. That's the big fight for us anyway this week. So keep an eye across that. Thank you very much for listening to us. You can get us on iTunes. Fight Disciples is what you're looking for. FightDisciples.com is our website. And you can also get all our social media feeds on that website as well, FightDisciples.com. Like I said, thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.
Thank you for listening. If you like what you heard, subscribe via iTunes.